Hello, I'm Lino Mudu. Welcome to Health Chat. The World Health Organization is warning that an outbreak of Ebola in Democratic Republic of Congo and Guinea poses a regional risk that requires exceptional vigilance. Health officials in Guinea's southeastern Nzerekure district say seven people who attended the funeral of a nurse tested positive for the disease and experienced symptoms such as diarrhea, vomiting, and bleeding. Four of them died. Separately, Congo has confirmed four cases of Ebola since a resurgence of the virus was announced on February 7th in Butembo, the epicenter of a previous outbreak that was declared over last June. Ebola is a rare but severe, often fatal illness in humans. The virus is transmitted to people from wild animals and spreads in the human population through human-to-human transmission. The average case fatality is around 50%, according to the World Health Organization. For more on the subject, I spoke with Dr. Ngoi Nsenga, Program Manager for Emergency Response at the WHO Regional Office for Africa. He shares some insights on strategies to contain the outbreaks in the DRC and Guinea.
Dr. Ngoi Nsenga, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Eleanor. Thank you for having me.
The DRC recently announced the resurgence of cases of Ebola in the country after its 11th outbreak ended 3 months ago. Guinea has officially declared an Ebola epidemic 5 years after the epidemic in West Africa. What do we know about these outbreaks?
What we know for this outbreak is that in DRC first, so we are now counting about four cases detected in the province of North Kivu. And what we know is that all those cases are actually linked to the case, to the previous Ebola outbreak. So this is that's why we are saying this is a resurgence. This is not a new outbreak in DRC. For Guinea, we are also in they have now recorded about seven cases in Guinea. But obviously, this is not related, but the investigation is still going. This is not related to the outbreak we had 5 years ago, but this is apparently a new outbreak in Guinea.
When we're dealing with a resurgence versus a new outbreak, are there some difference in strategies?
You are absolutely right. I mean, that's a very good question. So operationally, what we are intending to do in both cases is to stop the spread of Ebola as quickly as possible, to bring what we call, technically, to bring the outbreak under control. That's what we're doing now. So the measure to achieve that objective, they are the same. One, we need to win over the community to work with us and to be part of the response. And two, abide by what we call public health measures, including at all cost avoid getting in touch with a body fluid of person who's sick or who has contracted Ebola. And obviously the other measure, including, thankfully, now we have a vaccine, include vaccination of those contact, of the person who have been in contact with the sick person. And of course, we need to track, I mean, contact, to follow the contact. Any person who has been in contact with a sick person to be followed at least for 21 days and make sure that if she or he falls sick, it doesn't transmit to the next person. So in terms of approach and strategy, there are not much difference, but at least it's very important to know which situation are we dealing with. Because, for instance, we know that the vaccine that we're using in DRC is effective in one space of Ebola. So knowing that it's the same space is very important. You can confidently vaccinate people knowing that they will be protected against that space of Ebola, and it will contribute to bring the outbreak as quickly as possible under control.
Are we dealing with the same strains when we look at the DRC versus Guinea?
Yes, it's what we call the species is Ebola Zaire in terms of the outbreak in DRC. But my understanding is the sequencing, I mean, that's how to see which genetic material this virus is. The sequencing in the case of Guinea is still ongoing. So at this point, we are not yet yet sure, at least until yesterday when I got the last information I have.
Looking at the COVID-19 outbreak, what are we looking at in terms of priorities?
Thank you very much. I think public health-wise, there's no choosing between the two. They're all priorities. We need to deal with Ebola at the same time as we are dealing with the COVID-19. Obviously, as you can imagine, this is a challenge for the country. This is a challenge for our region. But we need to deal with this disease. But one hope, I can put it that way, one strength is for this region and for these countries, these are the outbreak they are kind of used to dealing with. So they have the capacity, they have the know-how, they have the institutional memory. So we are going to tap into that and to tap into the community strength, the way to bring them over and to make them part of the action to deal and to bring this outbreak as quickly as possible under control.
Many experts have said that lessons learned from West Africa and Congo have helped in tackling COVID-19 on the continent. What are some of those lessons learned? And does this mean that Africa is better prepared now to address Ebola?
No, I think it would be presumptuous for us to say Africa is better prepared. Obviously, where we were before the Ebola in 2013, 2014, 2015 in West Africa, we are no longer there, obviously, in terms of getting prepared in Africa and getting ready to respond to outbreak. But it's also true that we are not quite where we want to be in terms of getting our country completely ready. For instance, I will give you an example. In terms of laboratory capacity, when we got the COVID-19, only two countries in Africa could test COVID. But now we have all our 47 member states of the Afro region of the World Health Organization can now test the COVID. So they've made progress, not only in terms of laboratory, they've also made progress in terms of structure, structuring the preparedness and structuring the response. As you can remember, for the COVID, for instance, in many of our African countries, they were swift to take action. Actually, some took even action even before they got the single case. So we can say, yes, they've made progress since then, but obviously we are not yet where we want to be.
So what is the greatest concern at this point with the resurgence of Ebola outbreaks in the DRC and Guinea?
In all outbreaks, especially Ebola, first of all, we are expecting that Ebola can pop up. I mean, the ecology of our countries, the virus is in the environment, is there in the nature. So, is the contact between human being the animal, especially the wild animal, that at end we have Ebola coming up in our community. So Ebola, we're expecting to have Ebola outbreak popping up here and there. But what we don't want is to have one case, two cases, or three cases, or five cases going into 100 cases instead of having one outbreak that lasts maybe 2 weeks, 4 weeks, a couple of weeks, but having an outbreak that lasts month, or if not years. That's what we don't want in Africa. And that's why we are trying to make our countries to reach that level of health security to deal as soon as they get they detect cases, to deal with those cases and to bring the outbreak under control. Let me say one thing, maybe, if you allow me. People, they think, are worried, like, for instance, one was asking, in DRC, they had detected cases of Ebola just a few months back. We were dealing with Ebola in the Equator. I say, yes, that's an issue, that's a challenge. But at the same time, as paradoxical as it can be, I'm a little bit I wouldn't say happy because this is a disease, obviously, but I'm kind of satisfied that we can detect, and we can detect when we are still having few cases. Several years ago, it was after several months when we have Ebola or an outbreak that has completely gone already under control that people will wake up and say, oh, we have actually Ebola. But now countries can detect it when they still have one case, two cases, or few cases. Thus, again, a sign of progress in terms of dealing with outbreaks in our region.
Is there more reasons for concern when Ebola is seen outside of the DRC because of the experience that the DRC has handling this disease, or is any Ebola outbreak a case for concern?
As you can imagine, people could think, yeah, if it happened in DRC, they have capacity, they have, as I was mentioning, institutional memory. That's true. But let me also bring here a kind of caveat, Lena. Every outbreak is a different outbreak. That's why countries need to get really prepared before an outbreak occurs. You remember, we were actually kind of saying the same thing when Ebola happened in Eastern DRC, because they were just coming from the ninth outbreak of Ebola in DRC. And when it came to the 10th, we were saying, oh, it's in DRC, they are going to do well. And to our surprise, it was a big challenge. And you remember that we had more than 3,000 cases of Ebola in Eastern DRC. Why? Because each outbreak is a different. Why is it different? It depends with so many factors. It depends with the context. It depends with the community. That's why I'm insisting from the beginning we need to bring in the community. So it depends with the community. It depends with the local capacity, not national capacity. National capacity is important, but local capacity. It depends also with the vulnerabilities of the population that is affected, vulnerability of the health system that is affected, which can vary not only between countries, but even within country. So these are the parameters that we need to take into account when we have an outbreak somewhere, that we should not take it light because, oh, is Guinea, they have capacity. Yes, prima facie, they have capacity, but every outbreak is a different outbreak.
And finally, with the COVID-19 pandemic in full swing, what will it take to fight Ebola successfully while keeping the momentum in the fight against COVID-19? And what are the challenges and opportunities of addressing Ebola outbreaks during COVID-19?
Interesting questions. First, when you look at Ebola and COVID, they might look different diseases. Yes, they are very different diseases in terms of mode of transmission. But in terms of prevention measure, they are kind of have some common measure of prevention. For instance, for Ebola, we are providing people to avoid touching any fluid, bodily fluid that they've been in contact with a patient or from a sick person. So for COVID, we are also advocating for social distancing, as we are calling it social distancing, but I prefer the term physical distancing because we need to remain socially connected, even though we are physically distancing ourselves. So those are the measures. Now it ends there, as I was mentioning. For the Ebola, we have other tools, very powerful tools, like vaccine. But you remember that even though we have vaccine now, but in Africa, we are still, many countries are still yet to get the vaccine. And true, because COVID is widespread, in the country, is the whole country basically, which is affected. We are dealing with the whole community, the whole population, while Ebola usually is in one localized either district or zone or even a village. So the measures are kind of the same, but at the same time, they are different, and we apply different approaches.
Dr. Ngoi Nsenga, thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate your time.
It's my pleasure, Lena. Thank you very much for having me again today.
That was Dr. Ngoi Nsenga, Program Manager for Emergency Response at the WHO Regional Office for Africa. It is time for a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Join issues in the news, moderator Shayna Estulin and a panel of Washington experts as they deliberate the latest top stories of the week, including the WHO grants an emergency authorization to the coronavirus vaccine made by AstraZeneca, a move that should allow its partners to ship millions of doses to countries worldwide. Don't miss Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Welcome back to Health Chat. South Africa has been the worst affected by coronavirus on the continent, with almost 1.5 million infections and 48,000 deaths. The first batch of Johnson & Johnson jabs is to be sent to 16 hospitals around the country, where they will be given to healthcare workers. Darren Taylor reports.
Infectious diseases specialist Glenda Gray led a trial of the J&J Ad26 vaccine at the height of South Africa's second wave of COVID-19. Those infections and deaths, which continue today, were driven by the highly infectious 501Y V2 variant, first identified in the country in December. Gray believes the Ad26 jab suits South Africa because it only needs one dose to work and can be stored at normal fridge temperature.
The single-shot vaccine, irrespective of what region you are in the world, has protected against hospitalization and death. So yes, maybe this vaccine may not stop you getting the sniffles, but this vaccine will stop you from dying or from going to hospital. And I think that's a very good and powerful vaccine, because that's going to help us keep our hospitals open and it's going to protect our healthcare workers.
The first batch will be injected into doctors, nurses, and other healthcare givers, even though it hasn't been approved yet by international medicine regulators such as the World Health Organization.
Although we know the vaccine works, you're in a kind of regulatory no man's land. One could always just wait for the vaccine to be registered, but that would be 12 weeks away.
Gray says it would be inhumane not to administer a jab that's scientifically proven to work against the variant simply because of red tape. Therefore, the health department will allow it to be given to healthcare workers on a trial basis.
That's what we would call a phase 3B study. And the 3B is, how do you execute the rollout program? So it's much more about learning about how you roll it out rather than learning about whether it works or not.
Nevertheless, some in the healthcare sector are upset that they're expected to take an unapproved vaccine. Gray says they've nothing to worry about. But nursing unions remain adamant they won't allow their members to be used as guinea pigs.
What we're doing is that we're accelerating the timeline to give vaccines to healthcare workers, because they need it before the next wave comes. This vaccine will protect them from dying and protect them from being hospitalized. I can't see how being protected from death and hospitalization is making you a guinea pig.
The state says it won't force anyone to be vaccinated, but Gray hopes healthcare givers will consider the benefits of the Ad26 shot.
The data speaks for itself. My researchers who are working on this vaccine have asked me, Glenda, can we be first in line? Can we take the vaccine? Can we get it? And so if the researchers who worked on the vaccine want to be the first to take it, that is evidence that there's huge trust by the scientific community to take the vaccine, because they've seen what it did. I want to be first in line to take the vaccine.
The government expects 500,000 J&J vaccines to arrive in South Africa by April and to have enough shots soon thereafter to inoculate 1.25 million people in healthcare. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Zimbabwe's government says vaccination of frontline workers shall commence this week after the first COVID-19 from China arrived. But some critics worry about the apparent lack of transparency in the vaccination program. Reporter Kudzanai Mutsengi brings us more.
Zimbabwe's co-vice president and health minister, Constantino Chiwenga, received a donation of 200,000 doses of vaccine from China. The Zimbabwean government has ordered an additional 600,000 doses from Sinopharm that are expected to arrive next month. Chiwenga said the donation underlines the country's strong relations with China and offers hope to Zimbabweans whose hardships have worsened due to lockdowns imposed to stem the spread of the pandemic.
The vaccine also offers the possibility that our people, who have borne the brunt of the economic ravages of the pandemic, might finally turn a new page following the unfortunate interruptions to the economic activities that have been necessitated by the need to contain the spread of the virus.
In a recent rollout and deployment document, government says its target is to inoculate 22% of the population, about 3,662,000 people, consisting of frontline workers, including those in health, ports of entry, and defense and security. Government estimates the cost of the first phase of the program at $1.3 million. Tabani Moyo is the director of the Media Institute of Southern Africa's Zimbabwe chapter. It recently won a High Court order to compel the government to release comprehensive information to the public on the spread and management of COVID-19 following concerns it wasn't doing enough in that regard. Moyo says his organization remains worried about lack of access to information, including the vaccination strategy.
What the government has simply said is to say that we are going to do intense analysis of the drugs. How do you procure and start to investigate when you have already procured? It does not make sense that you go all the way in terms of logistical costs to get a drug and you say you want to start analyzing it. This is quite worrying, and we hope that medical professionals will be given scope and space to take a frontline role rather than politician.
Former Health Minister Dr. Henry Madzorera also believes the vaccination rollout plan is inadequate and not especially clear on the deployment, transportation and storage of the temperature-sensitive vaccines.
I've heard some serving members within the nursing fraternity expressing some concerns about the cold chain. And that needs to be verified because the cold chain is critical for this massive vaccination program. So we still need to see the comprehensive rollout plan for us to be satisfied.
The government says it is targeting to vaccinate 60% of the population of about 16,559,000 by year's end. Harare was recently forced to back down amid public outcry after Finance Minister Mthuli Ncube said citizens would have to pay for the vaccines, but there are lingering concerns that government is still not being transparent. Reporting for VOA from Bulawayo, I am Kudzanai Musengi.
Mixed signals from South Africa and the World Health Organization on the main vaccine expected to be used by the developing world. This week, the global organization approved emergency use of the AstraZeneca vaccine. Meanwhile, South Africa, which earlier this month received 1 million doses, is reportedly looking to return their stock after a trial showed disappointing results. VOA's Anita Powell brings us up to speed from Johannesburg.
Africa's viral epicenter, South Africa, confirmed Tuesday that it is jettisoning its plans to use the AstraZeneca vaccine and will switch to a different one. That announcement came a day after the vaccine, which is the leading choice for the developing world, received emergency use authorization from the World Health Organization. WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus.
Today, WHO gave emergency use listing to two versions of the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine, giving the green light for these vaccines to be rolled out globally through COVAX. WHO emergency use listing assesses and assures the quality, safety, and efficacy of COVID-19 vaccines and is a prerequisite for vaccines to be distributed by COVAX. This listing was completed in just under 4 weeks from the time WHO received the full dossiers from the manufacturers. In addition to the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine, these are now the second and third vaccines to receive emergency use listing. We now have all the pieces in place for the rapid distribution of vaccines.
But South Africa's experience with the AstraZeneca vaccine has been far from smooth or encouraging. The nation carries the bulk of the continent's cases, with 1.49 million confirmed cases. Earlier this month, South Africa received 1 million doses of the promising vaccine at a price of just over $5 each. That is nearly three times the amount the EU members are paying for the same vaccine, according to information leaked by European officials. When the vaccine arrived on a rainy February day, South African officials were also startled to discover that this batch of vaccines, which has a six-month storage life, was set to expire in April. That discovery was followed by the disappointing announcement that a study conducted in South Africa found that this vaccine is not totally effective against the highly contagious variant of the virus that is prevalent in the country. And so, on Tuesday, South African health officials announced that they would receive a shipment of 80,000 doses of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine later in the day and begin inoculating health workers on Wednesday. Health Minister Zweli Mkhize told local media that another 420,000 doses of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine would land in the next 4 weeks, along with another 20 million doses of the two-shot Pfizer vaccine. The nation plans to inoculate 40 million people, about 67% of the population. And what of that huge stockpile of AstraZeneca vaccines? On Tuesday, the deputy health minister denied reports that the government has asked the manufacturer to take back all 1 million doses. South Africa will reportedly try to trade them with countries that do not have high incidence of the variant, known as B1351 or 501YV2. Dr. Kate O'Brien, the WHO's director of immunization vaccines and biologicals, said this vaccine may still prove useful elsewhere.
Countries remain enthusiastic about receiving the AstraZeneca product, while at the same time, you know, asking very relevant questions about what the evidence shows and what the evidence doesn't show. And I'll just reinforce that there is no evidence on whether or not the AstraZeneca product against the B1351 variant has any change, or if the change in the efficacy is of a substantial change. And there are plausible reasons why we think that there will retain activity against severe disease.
South African authorities said Tuesday that first in line for the Wednesday shot would be frontline healthcare workers at public and private clinics across the country. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Now to Malawi, where a second wave of COVID-19 is posing a great challenge. Reporter Lamek Masina takes a look at vaccination efforts.
In a televised address Sunday, President Chakwera said he was outraged with the alleged abuse of $8 million he allocated in August for tackling the pandemic. Malawi's Office of the Ombudsman said more than half of the money was spent on food, travel, and accommodations for the members of various task forces. Chakwera said he had fired the heads of several entities responsible for managing COVID-19 funds after they failed to account for how the funds were used.
All cluster heads, with the exception of one, submitted reports with no back-end documents and had to be told on site to bring back-end documents. Mind you, these are reports of money that was mostly spent last year, whose back-end documents ought to have been maintained regularly, and yet cluster heads appeared before my task force showing clear signs of negligence.
Chakwera also announced the country will this week receive 100,000 additional AstraZeneca coronavirus vaccines secured through the African Union for the protection of health workers. He said this consignment for health workers is different from the 1.5 million doses arriving at the end of the month for the general public.
They put their lives at risk to save lives every day, and they share in the devastation we feel from losing loved ones to this virus, including the 100 people who have died of COVID-19 this past week. May their souls rest in peace.
Malawi has so far registered 29,035 confirmed cases of COVID-19, with 952 deaths since the first three cases were reported in April of last year.
COVID-19 death is tragic and to be mourned. And although it is God who ultimately has power over life and death, the deaths that are preventable are even more heartbreaking. We therefore have a moral and civic duty to do everything we can do to ensure that no penny meant for saving lives is stolen or abused or wasted by anybody.
The president said this is the reason he is pushing for accountability in the funds meant to fight the pandemic. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta, Malawi.
That's all for this edition of Health Chat. For the latest news and coverage on the coronavirus pandemic, visit voanews.com. Check us out at facebook.com/voahealthchat and let's keep the conversation going. Thank you all for joining us, and special thanks to all of our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Lino Mudu, in Washington, with producer Dan Brown. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and wash your hands more frequently, and strive to make every day a healthy day.